It is the first day of school for many Idaho kids, and some of those schools, well, they're now ranked as the worst in the Gem State. Last week, the State Department of Education listed Idaho's 29 lowest performing schools as part of a new accountability plan. And officials there say this list isn't to ridicule, but to help. Each school will remain on the list for 3 years and will be eligible for extra support designed to turn those schools around. Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News has been following the story. He joins me live in studio to talk more about this. Welcome to the show, and what a way to get the first day of school off on the right note.
Welcome back, Gemma.
Yeah, exactly, right? Okay, so for people who may not have been following this, how did we get to this point of ranking the schools, and frankly, ranking the worst schools?
Right. To make a long story short here, the state has kind of wrangled for several years with how to do an accountability system. Back a few years ago, we used to have a 5-star rating system that nobody really liked. It seemed arbitrary. The rankings didn't make a whole lot of sense, and it was ditched several years ago. It was ditched before Sherry Ibarra was elected state superintendent. So now, federal education law, the new federal education law, requires all states to have some sort of an accountability measure. And some schools are using something like a 5-star rating or a letter grade. The state of Idaho isn't doing that kind of a single ranking. But what Idaho's doing, and all states are having to do, is identify its lowest performing schools. And you look at test scores, you look at student growth, you look at graduation rates when you're looking at the high schools. You take all of these metrics and you come up with a list of the lowest performing schools. And that's what the state issued on Wednesday, the list of the 29 lowest performing schools in the state.
And the point of this, as the State Department of Ed says, is we want to give these schools help and resources.
Exactly. And there will be resources going to these schools. There's going to be some federal money that's going to be going to these schools, some staffing designed to try to help these schools turn around. And I think that that's important to note. But, you know, let's face it. I mean, a lot of people are going to look at these rankings. They're going to look at the list of the 29 schools. And it's got to be a bitter pill for folks in communities to swallow. And it's a sensitive topic. Mm-hmm. Whenever you're doing any kind of a ranking like this and identifying schools and publicly identifying them and naming them, it's a sensitive issue. There's no question about that.
Well, in a way, it's shaming them. And I know that wasn't
even
the point
of it. Even if you don't call it that, I mean, it has that effect. I mean,
it
some
does.
People are going to look at the
effect.
List and they're going to say, wow, you know, my kid's school is on this list. Or, gee, thank goodness my kid's school isn't on this list.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's the visceral reaction when a list like this comes out. You can't get around that. That's human nature.
And let's talk about the list, because most of these schools, of the 29, it is the same story, different day. We're talking rural. We're talking lower income. Even alternative schools made the list. And those two were in the largest school district. But for the most part, were they not mostly these smaller school districts that we're talking about?
I think it's really important when you look at this list to look at the underlying demographics of these schools, because you're right. Several of these schools are alternative schools. So you're going to be serving kids who are at risk.
Mm-hmm.
A number of schools, like you say, that are in rural districts. And it's not just rural districts. It's districts with high levels of poverty. I ran the numbers when the rankings came out, and the vast majority of the schools on this list have poverty rates that are above the state average. When you look at the numbers of kids who are eligible for free lunch or reduced price lunch, and that's kind of
that's the gauge.
That's the standard. That's
right.
What has been used for years to sort of gauge school poverty. Almost all of these schools have higher poverty rates than the state average. And I know some people will look at that and say, that's making excuses, but it's really not. I mean, I think you really have to look at the underlying demographics of these schools. So you've got poverty, you've got at-risk populations, and it's not just the traditional public schools that fall into this category. One of the charter schools that made the list is a virtual charter school, and the virtual charter schools have struggled for years with academic performance, and the folks working at the virtual charter schools will say, well, we're taking, to a large degree, students that are not fitting into traditional schools. They're leaving traditional schools to pursue virtual learning at home because of, you know, any number of issues. So that's an at-risk population. You have to look at the demographics.
I'm speaking with Kevin Richert with Idaho Education News. We're talking about the latest rankings that came out through the State Department of Education, ranking the 29 worst schools in the state of Idaho. And Kevin, what was interesting to me as well, that more than half of these schools on the list were elementary and middle schools, even though this ranking went K through 12.
Right. That shouldn't be too surprising. I mean, there are more elementary and junior high schools in the state than there are high schools. So I haven't really looked at the numbers closely enough to tell you if that's in proportion, but that didn't really surprise me that you had more elementary schools just because of the sheer numbers. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting too, getting back to this idea of the schools that have free and reduced lunch. And as you said, there are naysayers out there that will say that that's an excuse. I mean, the schools just aren't doing their job. But frankly, when you go to school and you're hungry, and maybe this is the only meal of the day, and maybe you, it's not just, I mean, look, a lot of parents work, right? But when you put poverty on top of that, and parents are working paycheck to paycheck, and then you're coming home and being by yourself, I mean, this is reality for a lot of Idaho.
Well, I find myself struck by the Plummer-Worley School District, which is on this list three times. All three of their schools are on this list of the 29 lowest performing schools. So from K through 12, it's an entire system of schools that were ranked lowest performing in the state. Plummer-Worley is an extremely high poverty district. I mean, it's on or near the Coeur d'Alene tribal reservation. So it's a very high poverty district. And I wonder how a district like that responds to this sort of a ranking when you're dealing with some very underlying, harsh demographic realities.
And what's interesting about that, too, is it goes back to that idea of putting them on this list and publicly putting them on this list. How does that, as a school district, as a superintendent, how do you move your district forward saying, you know what, we're not as bad as this list says?
Well, and that's going to be what makes this a really interesting story for us to follow. This isn't a one-day story for us. This is going to be a three-year story for us because
they're on this list for three years.
They're on this list for 3 years, and I suspect that there are a lot of different stories to tell in these communities, in these schools, as maybe the shock of being on the list wears off and kind of the reality sets in of being on this list, and you have people brought onto the ground to try to help local school administrators and local trustees try to get a handle on what it's going to take to improve these scores. I think every school's got an interesting story to tell here. So, and you don't know. You don't know how administrators are going to react. You don't know how communities are going to react. Do they take it as a challenge? Do they take this as an opportunity? Well, we've got some money. We've got some fresh thinking coming in now. Or, do you remain kind of defensive about this?
Right.
How is this perceived? How do you move forward? I mean, taking it as a challenge or taking it personally, those are very human reactions.
And I was going to say that, Kevin, like once the dust settles, I mean, could there potentially be good that comes out of this? I mean, if they are getting resources, if they are getting money, could 3 years from now could we be sitting here 3 years from now saying, this ultimately ended up being a good thing?
And it does happen. You know, we've written the story about the Horseshoe Bend School District, which a couple of years ago was in kind of a similar situation. Even though we didn't have this ranking coming out, Horseshoe Bend schools were struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And what you had happen up there was district leaders, school leaders saying, well, we're going to try to turn this around. We're not going to wallow in this. We're going to try to step up and see what we can do. And they've made some real improvements up there. So that's a success story. It'll be interesting to see if that kind of turnaround is replicated at these other schools, because that's what the State Department of Education is talking about. And you can, there's politics behind this list.
Right, absolutely.
There's a lot of emotional reaction that comes to the, that surrounds this kind of an announcement. The State Department of Education says their hope is that this is going to lead to some turnarounds in these schools. So we'll see how it plays out.
So what do you think is the ultimate takeaway with this list?
I don't think that people should be terribly surprised by what they're seeing in this list when you think about the makeup of the schools that are on this list. This is not a cross-section of 29 schools. I mean, if you picked 29 schools out of a hat, you would have much more of a...
They'd be more diverse.
...of a cross-section of what Idaho really looks like. The schools that we're talking about here, to a large degree, are dealing with some of the biggest challenges in education in Idaho. And, I mean, there are exceptions. I mean, one of the stories that we want to tell is the story of the Madison Junior High School in Rexburg, mm-hmm. which wound up on this list kind of surprisingly, and largely because the district opted out of the standardized tests.
And that was one of the things that they ranked them on.
One real, real big factor in the rankings was participation in the SBAC test. And that's the test that's aligned to Common Core. That's the online test that is being administered all over the state. Mm-hmm. Every state has to have a test like this under federal law, and every state is expected to have 95% of their students participate. Well, that didn't happen in Madison. There was a lot of pushback about the SBAC. There's been a lot of pushback about Common Core and the standards that are aligned to the SBAC test. So Madison Junior High School didn't hit that 95% participation, and that's a big reason why they're on this list. And I don't know...
But does that mean they're not doing well?
That's my question. And, there are so many questions that come out when you get a list like this. But that's one of my questions is this really one of the 29 worst performing schools in the state? Or are they on this list? And ironically, now they're going to get federal funding after a lot
to try to get them to take this test.
After a lot of pushback about, Common Core and SBAC, now you're going to have federal funding pumped into this school. And I think it's a fair question to ask. Could that money be better spent, more effectively spent in a school that is really mm-hmm. dealing with more academic challenges? I don't really know. And, so much we need to unwrap here. Now the list is out. For us, yeah. I think the real reporting begins.
And I'm curious to see what you guys uncover. So, of course, we'll have you back when all of those other reports come out. Kevin, thanks so much for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.